Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a lively Tuesday, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be. Listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Interesting night, interesting day. Sam Darnold, Gonzaga, Baylor. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. I won my bets on the game, so wasn't upset about that. And you were the first person I thought of when I saw that Sam Darnold news. Amazing. This NFL offseason has been the gift that keeps giving.
Yeah, it's great. It's going to happen. And by the way, a lot of stories this morning, Atlanta now number 4 is taking calls. They're going to trade that pick. So let me start with this. Sam Darnold, we called it yesterday on the show. We called it last week. Carolina was the place I was being told they were the most interested. The story is out after Easter weekend, after the Niners moved up. Carolina got very, very interested, and they made the move to get Darnold. First of all, I get it from the Jets' perspective, although, according to reports, a lot of people in the room thought about trading that pick. But I get it from the Jets' perspective. They get now a rookie quarterback on a rookie quarterback contract for 4 years. The new coach wants his quarterback. The new GM wants his quarterback. I get it. From the Carolina perspective, it was obvious. We saw it coming. They need a better athlete and somebody that can push the ball down the field. Matt Rhule is an aggressive head coach. He likes to go big up top with Robbie Anderson, and Teddy Bridgewater doesn't have that arm. So I get it. Here's the interesting thing. In life, forget sports. In life, nobody thinks your first job is your last job. If it is, be honest with yourself. You settled. Chase the commerce, chase the economy, chase opportunity. Your first job's lousy. You move on, get a second job. It doesn't define you for life. You're like 22, 23 years old. In all of our lives, even if you have a very professional job, your first law firm's not your last. Your first hospital as a doctor doesn't have to be your last. But in football at quarterback, not sports, but specifically in the NFL at quarterback, if your first job doesn't go well, like Sam Darnold with the Jets, you often get dismissed, ignored, labeled. And you're 23. That's how old Sam Darnold is. 23. I got my first job at 22. All Sam Darnold has ever deserved is a fair chance. In New York, his offensive line, his running backs, and his receivers all graded bottom 2 in the NFL. In Carolina, between Matt Rhule and offensive coordinator Joe Brady, he gets an upgrade. How much of an upgrade? I don't know, but at least it won't be toxic. Offensive line, though Carolina needs to draft a left tackle, and they will with their first pick, it's a competent offensive line with an excellent right tackle. Weapons, Christian McCaffrey, top 3 back in the NFL. Robbie Anderson, a speed receiver who Darnold's worked with before. DJ Moore, more than equipped weapons upgrade. In a division, by the way, that doesn't have 3 great defensive coaches, Sean McDermott, Brian Flores, and Belichick. No, this division's all about offense. Bruce Arians, Sean Payton, Arthur Smith. No more Belichick twice a year. No more Brian Flores twice a year. No more Josh Allen. You have Bruce Arians retiring soon. Saints are transitioning. Atlanta, again, is rebuilding. It's a very soon a winnable division. All Darnold deserved was a chance. And with quarterbacks, it's not about the win-loss record. I look at traits. Darnold has great traits. Coachable, tough, alpha, physical, leadership, guys like him. He's got all the traits I like. Yes, he's more mobile than Teddy Bridgewater. Yes, he's got a much bigger arm. Think about this, and this is often happens in life, is that, you know, what do they say? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. The reason Darnold is getting what most young quarterbacks do not get, a second chance and a good second chance, is the Jets' dysfunction. It's the Jets' dysfunction that almost killed Darnold's career. But the irony is, it's what is giving him a second chance because people go, well, hell, nobody could have succeeded there. How bad is the Jets' dysfunction? When Sam Darnold didn't play for the Jets, they were 0-10 and averaged 13 points a game and 150 passing yards. Statistically, they were the worst offense in league history, including the 76 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You thought Darnold struggled when they played. They couldn't get first downs when he didn't. And never forget this with Sam Darnold. He's younger right now today than Joe Burrow, than Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson. And remember, he came from a program, USC, and I'll say this diplomatically, where he was offensively undercoached for several years. With Trubisky, you never saw the wow. With Blake Bortles, you never saw the wow. With Tua, I don't see the wow. I've seen wow multiple times with Sam Darnold, and that's why, according to reports, the Jets, despite Darnold's record with Gase, were split on him. They were split on him. Sala liked him. But the belief was, if you kept Darnold and drafted a quarterback, it would be a distraction. And you had to pay Sam very quickly, and you don't have to pay Zach Wilson anything for 4 years. I get the Jets move. We called the Panthers move. Rooting for Sam Darnold. Root for all young quarterbacks, but especially Darnold, because in life, none of us get buried if our first boss, our first job is lousy. But in the NFL at quarterback, bizarrely, you do. All right, let's talk about Baylor Gonzaga. Years and years and years ago, we don't need to get into my age, I covered sports in Oregon, and I covered Oregon football. The coach was Mike Bellotti, and Mike Bellotti taught me something that I think about all the time. So Mike Bellotti had a discussion with him one time, and I noticed he was doing something on the sidelines during games. The first two series, he would be on his knees, crouched down, right down the line of scrimmage. And I said, I always watch you early in games, and you are right on the ball. You're not looking at anything else. And he said, Colin, it tells me how our offensive line and defensive lines match up. And I will know within 10 snaps, we cannot do this offensively. These power runs won't work. This will work. And it dictates where I go the rest of the game. In just two series, 6, 8, 10 snaps. I can't do this. We won't be able to do this. This will work well on both sides. And I think about that all the time because I believe in basketball and football. You can see superior strength and superior speed instantly. And you saw it last night with Baylor. It was 9-0, 11-1, 29-10. It was over 6 minutes in. Now, we do live in 2021 where you don't have to be bigger, stronger, faster. You can actually shoot your way to wins in 2021. But when Baylor is stronger and faster and quicker and the better three-point shooting team, good night, Spokane. It was over in minutes. I do not believe this is the end for Gonzaga. Jalen Suggs is their first superstar recruit. I actually believe they're in like the fifth, the sixth inning of this program. They have turned into the later innings, but Mark Few's in great shape. He's got another 10 to 12 years to coach. And finally, they now get Kentucky, Duke, Kansas, Syracuse, one and done recruits. I do not believe this is an indictment on Gonzaga. Listen, all you need to know about college basketball, Bill Self is a great coach, coaching 28 years, 18 at Kansas. He's got one title. Tom Izzo, great coach, 2.5 decades, Michigan State. He's got one title. John Calipari, 30 NBA players, Kentucky, one title. Jim Boeheim, 45 years, one title. It's really, really hard. 6 games, you're the favorite, not a lot of rest, different styles. By the end of it, you don't get a lot of prep time. Baylor was faster and quicker and more aggressive And when you combine that with, oh, yeah, they were also way better shooting threes. This thing was over in 6 minutes. Here's Mark Few, Zags coach.
They were just so much more aggressive than, I mean, they literally just, we haven't played like that this year. They just literally busted us out of anything we could possibly do on offense. And we were kind of playing, you know, with our back to the back, you know, not facing up, and we couldn't get anything generated going to the basket. We were kind of playing sideways.
By the way, we talked about Gonzaga being a buzzsaw. Do you realize Baylor's closest game was 9 points? They had 16 offensive rebounds last night. Gonzaga had 22 rebounds total. Baylor was better and faster and quicker and was a buzzsaw that we didn't pay a lot of attention to. Congratulations to the Bears. I don't think it's the end of anything up in Spokane. Good stuff. It was a fun night. Baylor seemed happy. It wasn't like Baylor's got a stack of trophies. It was their first.
No, it was their first.
Yeah, so it was like, yeah, I'm happy for them.
But you're right. We were paying more attention to Gonzaga.
And there was another buzzsaw on the other side.
Yes.
And they were routing everybody, too.
All the way through.
With three NBA guys, maybe four.
They were very impressive.
Very impressive. Way to go, Baylor. Waco, Texas. I went there one time.
I have not been to Waco,
Texas. Dr. Pepper.
Is that
Dr. Pepper is from Waco, Texas. They have the Dr. Pepper. I don't know if they still do.
I love Dr. Pepper. I haven't had a Dr. Pepper in a long time.
You know what? I'm going to celebrate Baylor's championship with a Dr. Pepper at some point today. Peter King's around the corner. Also, from the Jets' perspective, now I know a lot of people are saying, yeah, Sam Darnold's the winner here. Oh, no, he's not. And I'll talk about that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, veteran-owned, serving premium coffee to people who love America. I love it. BlackRifleCoffee.com/herd, 20% off your first coffee club order. I absolutely love it. Had a cup this morning. Didn't even put milk in it. Don't even need it. Like it that much. Joy is just a spectacle of beauty today, by the way. If you've now that she can get out of the house.
Thank you, Colin.
She's really making it work.
Thank you.
yesterday when the Darnold thing happened, you know, I'm rooting for Sam. I know Sam. I know his family. I'm really rooting for the kid. But I thought the winner in this was Zach Wilson, the BYU quarterback. So think about this. Joe Douglas, who had a very good draft last year. I know Joe. He's the Jets GM. Very sharp guy. Now, he doesn't have a huge track record, so a lot of this is based on the draft last year. I thought they had a great draft. I thought they got really good players. But he has now accumulated so many draft picks. So I just want to talk about the next 2 years. He has four first-rounders, three second-rounders, and three third-rounders. That should be 10 starters. Let's say he whiffs on a few. Let's just say he whiffs on a few. Okay, he hasn't shown the ability to whiff yet. They have so many picks now, but I want you to think about this. So let's talk about what the Jets do have. Defensive line is set. They went and got Carl Lawson, paid for him, but a good edge rusher. The defensive line was good. Now it's special. They don't need to worry about that in any of those draft picks. They also have Mekhi Becton, a left tackle. Sam Darnold didn't get that. It was a revolving door. That's set. They also have, with the addition of Corey Davis at wide receiver, enigmatic but talented, and Denzel Mims drafted him last year, Jamison Crowder. They've got weapons. They're not pathetic. They'll probably draft another receiver later, but they're not pathetic. So that's a pretty good starting point, what Zach Wilson gets. If you just look at the first three rounds this year, they get lucky too. It's a great year for offensive lines. They need offensive line help. What the Jets need is a corner, another running back, upgrade O-line. That's what they need. Let's just play mock draft time for the Jets. I went to a bunch of mock drafts this morning. I've seen almost all these guys play substantially. First pick this year, Zach Wilson. Rookie deal. So 4 years and not paying your quarterback. 23rd pick. This is the Jets pick. I would go Travis Etienne, the running back from Clemson. Great pass catching running back. They will now be set at running back because they drafted a kid out of Florida last year who's a nice complimentary back. 34th pick. Let's go get a right tackle. Dylan Raddins, North Dakota State. Raddins. People like him. I didn't see him play a lot. I've watched YouTube clips, called my guys on him. They like him. He's probably a year to develop, but you got your tackle bookends. 66 pick, Elijah Molden. Watch them a ton. Total baller, a playmaker corner from Washington. You solve that. By the way, a couple of their young secondary people are really talented. They have a safety from Cal and a corner from Virginia that have chance to be really special players already in-house. Your 87th pick. Let's go back to the O-line, the interior, to protect Zach Wilson, Trey Smith, Tennessee. Okay, I'm just talking the first three rounds this year. I'm not talking the rest of this draft. I'm not talking free agency because you don't pay Zach Wilson anything. I'm not talking about next year's two first-rounders and multiple second-rounders and third-rounders. You could solve virtually, if you just draft these, you don't have a ton of holes. Now, the division's tough, the coaching is great, and Zach Wilson's a kid from BYU. But this is not what Sam Darnold entered. This is not a pathetic situation. It's rebuilding. It needs an infusion of energy, talent, and juice. But you now have a capable GM. Darnold didn't. You now have a non-toxic coaching staff. Darnold didn't. You actually have capable, after this draft, receivers and running backs. Darnold never did it. This is not a pathetic situation. In fact, the Jets just released their 2021 team poster. You can see it right here. New York Jets, we're not pathetic. It's actually very, very encouraging. And I think the winner is Zach Wilson. It's the opposite of the Carmelo Anthony deal to the Knicks. Carmelo Anthony was a Denver Nugget. He told everybody, I'm only going to the Knicks. So the Knicks had no leverage, had to trade all their parts to get him. And then Carmelo arrives in New York with nothing around him for years. It's the opposite. I actually think the Jets got an extra pick from Carolina I didn't suspect. They got a second, a fourth, and a sixth. I thought they'd get like a second and a sixth, a fourth and a sixth. So I think Zach Wilson's coming into a situation. It won't be toxic, capable GM. You'll have your right tackle, your bookend tackles. You'll have very capable weapons at wide receiver. Also, if you go out and get a running back, it's not a great running back class, but if you look at your early, second, late, first, there's a couple of potential star running backs in this draft. Good stuff for Zach. And we wish him well. Again, I want all these guys to succeed. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Also, we don't know what Robert Saleh is going to be as a head coach, but he is definitely going to have that defense flying around.
And he also brought
Mike LaFleur,
an offensive coordinator from San Francisco.
Yeah, Mike LaFleur. He's Matt's younger brother. He was the passing game coordinator in San Francisco.
So it just, the other thing, it won't be toxic.
Yeah.
You're going to have, I mean, it was so, Greg Williams hated Adam Gase. Adam Gase hated.
It was madness.
It was insane for a 21-year-old, 22-year-old quarterback.
Yeah, that's a lot to overcome. So the draft just continues to get more interesting. The Falcons are in a very interesting position. We already felt like they were the key to the draft, but now with all this movement, things do get really interesting. So they have the fourth pick in the draft this year. Picks 1 through 3 are locked in.
Quarterbacks.
So we're assuming they're all going to take quarterbacks without an immediate need at the quarterback position.
Don't
Atlanta is reportedly open to moving down. According to Albert Breer, the Falcons have had exploratory talks with teams about trading the fourth overall pick. Schefter also reported the Falcons have received calls from multiple teams.
Denver.
I have to assume that Denver is trying to make a move. Because if you look at the draft order right now, we know the top three are going to take quarterbacks. The Falcons don't need a quarterback.
They don't.
Bengals don't need a quarterback. Bengals could move also. We are assuming that they won't because they're generally very conservative. But they may move also. The Dolphins have already moved, so they're locked in at 6. The Lions have their quarterback. They have no need.
Carolina's
to
got
there.
Theirs.
Carolina has theirs.
Dallas
now.
Has theirs. Giants have theirs. And the Eagles aren't. They wouldn't have moved back if they were going to take a quarterback.
Exactly. So it really now, what happens later in the draft? Like, who knows if there's another team that's putting together a package to jump all of those? That's a very far way to go once you get out of the top 12 picks to move up that far. I mean, it's not unheard of, but yeah, to me, if you're the Broncos, this is the time to try and make a move like that. You are in a division where you absolutely have to have a dynamic quarterback. And
if Derek Carr's the third best quarterback in your division, Derek Carr's carried the Raiders the last 2 years. it's a pretty good quarterback division.
And it seems like they're at least taking calls. So, I mean, that's the right thing for the Falcons to do is to move back.
By the way, now we've been doing this every week or so, Joy. We do top 10 mock drafts when stuff changes. When the Niners moved to number 3, we did a new mock draft.
Yeah.
Because we know they're going to take a quarterback. We will do another mock draft in 35 minutes because now we know Carolina has their quarterback. What is interesting now is as that Carolina move for Darnold really centers the top 10 picks. It's much easier now, and I'm going to include a trade for the first time ever.
In your mock draft?
Yeah, because Atlanta's going to trade the pick.
Yeah, they should.
So, at the top of the hour, first of all, I love mock drafts. But I think now, when I did today, is I was like, God, this looks like the first 10 picks. It's not, you can see what people need and what's available. And now that Atlanta's saying, because we always said Atlanta was a weird, what Atlanta needed is not available at 4. Atlanta was the one team in the top 10. You're like, they don't need a quarterback.
Yeah, Matt Ryan is not the problem.
And they're not dying for wide receivers, and it's a quarterback, wide receiver, O-line draft early. They need Micah Parsons. They need a corner. You can get that stuff at 19.
So Aaron Rodgers, he is hosting Jeopardy right now and doing a very good job. We'll play a clip from that later. But he's been very vocal about not having much control over his future with the Packers. Last year, the team drafted Jordan Love, of course, and he played incredibly well and won his third NFL MVP, but he said he's not sure if his performance in 2020 has changed anything about his standing with the team.
Nothing's really changed. You know, my future is really, a lot of it's out of my control. You know, that's why I mentioned, you know, using words like a phrase like beautiful mystery, like, because it is quite uncertain which directions that things are going to go. All I can do is play my best, and I feel like last year I did do that and may have thrown a wrench into some timelines that may have been thought about or desired, but ultimately, you know, things haven't really changed on that front.
I don't understand it. I don't understand.
I'm going to explain this in 15 minutes.
Okay, because the way that I am receiving this, the way I am absorbing this from Aaron Rodgers is that he feels similarly to Tom Brady for different reasons, I think, because Bill Belichick obviously has a very unique personality, but feels a little bit unappreciated.
Right.
Feels like they haven't really gone all in on Aaron Rodgers in his prime, which he's very much in, just won an MVP.
Agree.
And he feels like he is kind of being unappreciated and his talents a bit wasted.
Right.
And like the fact that Aaron Rodgers feels like he has to play to a certain level, as great as his bottom line is.
I have a theory, and it's brilliant by Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
Because I mean, we know he's smart.
Yeah, he's very smart.
Host Jeopardy, smart guy show.
Very smart, very intelligent guy.
I have a theory. It's a very savvy move that Aaron Rodgers is making.
I don't think any of this isn't calculated.
Thank you.
He picks all of his words very, very carefully.
Very carefully.
But I just find it wild that this is even a scenario. Like, at some point or another, even though we talk about all the times, you know, cities and teams have personalities and just kind of the way that they do things, it's really ridiculous that they haven't been to more championships and won more championships with Aaron Rodgers on their roster. Finally, baseball's back. The Astros are playing in front of fans for the first time since their sign-stealing scandal. They kind of got skipped over for their pennants last year because there were no fans in the stands.
Right.
Well, they've been showered with boos from opposing fans so far this season, but Angels spectators took it up a notch last night. That is a blow-up garbage can, so not an actual garbage can. In the sixth inning, they threw an inflatable can over the right field wall, which we're showing right now, and not long after, a real trash can was thrown onto the field, spilling bottles onto the warning track. That feels a little bit dangerous.
Yeah.
And Dusty Baker said you can tell the amount of hostility and the amount of hatred in the stands.
Well, you know what, though? If you look at what Houston did, it's gross.
It is gross.
I mean, it's beyond, like, you know, I mean, I get steroids.
Everybody pushes the limit a little bit. The idea that everyone just is totally upstanding citizen. I know baseball has all these unwritten rules and this, like,
everybody
air about
it.
The game. But everyone in any kind of competitive industry, you're going to try and get an edge however you can.
But that's not industrial-level cheating using electronics. Like in Vegas, Joy, I read a book on this once. In Vegas, they know there are card counters.
Yes.
That's why they reshuffle the deck. But they'll take you out back and let you meet Cousin Vinny if you have electronics on you and you're tipping somebody. That's happened before.
Yeah.
So there's a difference between he's counting cards. They understand it's legal, but they don't like it.
Of course.
And I've got a beeper on me, and every time I do this, or you're doing signs, then you go out back and meet a Louisville Slugger. That's what happens.
Yes, like there's levels to things. Like I'm a realist. People try and find edges in everything, in every business, ways to kind of not cheat, not actually break the rules, but bend the rules a little bit. Just do a little something to give you a little edge. Everyone does it. The Patriots have been doing a little bit more than that for a very long time, and they have lots of championships to show for all of that.
But that Houston was blew through
this
that.
You guys had a whole system, and like you deserve the animosity from the fans.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely deserved. I don't think that baseball is like this angelic sport. Like we've got plenty of history of that.
Right.
And no sport is, but the fans deserve. Don't throw real cans on the field, though. That seems dangerous. It might hit somebody.
It may. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
So listen, a lot of people are saying this morning about Gonzaga, you're a fraud, you can't win the big game, you come from a weak classification. And my takeaway is, I think they're in like the fifth or sixth inning of their program. They're finally landing great one-and-done recruits. And this was their first team with a one-and-done recruit. And they blew through the tournament until UCLA got physical and Baylor got really physical. And Steve Lavin, former UCLA coach, broadcaster, Fox Sports, is now joining us live. I know there is a little bit of this is the American sports DNA, Steve. When the little conference team rolls through everybody and they get against a big conference team and get rolled, a lot of people in America are like, yeah, you guys are a bunch of phonies. But I look and I think, hell, Baylor blew through everybody in the tournament. I don't think Gonzaga's going anywhere. I mean, what was your takeaway on the game?
Well, for starters, in terms of Gonzaga and what Mark Few has achieved, a really unprecedented level of success. And that's backed up by the analytics and the numbers. It's his second Final Four. And the only surprise last night to me was the convincing fashion that Baylor won the game. They really dominated from start to finish. Their defense was as impressive as any title game defense as I can remember since the 1990 UNLV Running Rebels under Jerry Tarkanian,
yep,
when they dominated the Duke Blue Devils. So I don't think Gonzaga is going away. They're a remarkable story. Decade after decade, they've been dominant. And on an annual basis, they challenge themselves with the most rigorous schedules in the non-conference,
yeah,
of any team in the country.
That's right.
So I agree with you.
You know, I would say this, and this is funny. You would know this as a coach. Sometimes when you're so good offensively, it is a natural. We're all human here. You don't play with the urgency defensively. And I do think Gonzaga at times could score so quickly, they didn't always give you a great defensive effort. Like last night, I felt to myself, listen, you picked a bad night not to be keyed in defensively. And when you were in your coaching, was it harder to push for defense the better and more talented and skilled your offenses were?
Well, for starters, there's that old adage, and it's been around for a reason. You know, it's tough to be exceptional in every phase of the game. Now, last night, Baylor was an example of a team on both sides of the ball that played at a magic level. They knocked down 10 threes. They have the positionless basketball on the perimeter. When you look at Mitchell and Butler and Teague, those three guards for the,
yeah,
Bears, the best perimeter attack in the country.
Yeah.
So it is difficult to be great on both sides of the ball. We see it in football on occasion. You know, Pete Carroll's USC Trojans and Nick Saban's Alabama teams have had that balance offensively and defensively. But I think Butler exposed some things, and nothing wrong with that. It's not an insult to Gonzaga, just the personnel that that Baylor has exposed. And mostly it was the foot speed.
Yeah.
Let's face it. They are a tough matchup.
Yeah.
Similar to playing the Golden State Warriors. It's tough to play Golden State when they're hitting on all cylinders a few years back before the injuries to Clay and whatnot. But yeah, let's give Baylor some credit here too.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting. College basketball, I said this the other day, you better be very careful about firing your coaches in college basketball, because with a transfer portal, not only will the coach be gone, the players will all leave and you'll be starting from scratch. Give coaches an extra year or two. Steve, when Baylor's interesting. They've used the transfer portal a little bit. And I know it's a turnoff for a lot of coaches, but I look at it and I think to myself, I watch this tournament and Baylor's got three NBA guys and Gonzaga's got two, three NBA guys. And I'm like, all coaches hate the transfer portal, but I'm like, it's just a new thing. I've never had more fun in the last 10 years watching the tournament. I actually felt at the end of it, Steve, this was a good March Madness for college basketball. It showed that you could use the transfer portal and win a title and be great. I mean, I don't know. I come out of it this morning feeling better about college basketball.
Well, for starters, let's take the transfer portal. That's been the biggest change in college basketball over the past few decades. You know, the early 80s, we had the clock that was implemented in the college game. 87, the three-point line. And now the grad transfer rule and the transfer portal, 1,100 names are in this year's transfer portal. That has dramatically changed the game in terms of the biggest trend. And it's a two-way street. You can reload.
Yeah.
With poaching from other mid-major programs and players that either want to come back home or they like the system or style play, whatever the reason may be. And so like free agency, but in college, you can elevate, improve your roster in the offseason. The downside is programs can also be gutted.
Yeah.
Where they lose six or seven players. We're seeing that right now at Cincinnati and St. John's and some other schools. And it puts a lot of pressure on staffs to be able to go out, use their relationships, their network throughout the world and this country to be able to reload at a level that will allow you to win games. Because you can go out and pick up a lot of transfers, but if they can't play at a high level, that's not going to help your cause, because at the end of the day, you got to win games, make the tournament, and advance in the tournament to keep your job. So it's a two-way street, but I agree there were some great stories about transfers that found a good home and help those programs, like a good trade or a good marriage. And I think overall, to your other point, this was a tremendous NCAA tournament and March Madness. And Dan Gavitt and Mitch Barnhart deserve a lot of credit, along with the rest of the committee, because these were difficult conditions. So I think everyone deserves a salute in college basketball on the men's and women's side.
There's
some great stories there on the women's side as well.
Yeah, no, I've said this before. The people running sports, I like them more than I like a lot of the governors in America. I think the commissioners and, you know, the NCAA always gets beaten up by the media, and I'm like, I don't know. They pulled this puppy off. I thought the men's and the women's were glorious finals. Finally, I got to give a tip of the cap to UCLA. Mick Cronin was not the first choice. He may have been the third. UCLA is a very glamorous program. The campus is in Bel Air. It is bougie and amazing, and I couldn't afford a house in the neighborhood. But I will say this, Mick Cronin, this was a tough, physical, relentless team. Were you a bit surprised how far they went in the style that really connected with those LA kids?
Yeah, interestingly, in mid-January, I actually had my crystal ball out, and occasionally the projections pay off, and I had them either winning the national title or contending for a national title, and that was mid-January. So I could see early that they had the pieces. What's remarkable is, you know, a short bench. They had some injuries.
Yeah.
And that actually led to a seven-man rotation, a more cohesive approach both offensively and defensively. And I really fell in love with this UCLA team. They controlled tempo in terms of imposing a 337th rated pace or tempo, but they were proficient and they worked for good shots. They take opportunities off their defense if they have the numbers in transition. But Johnny Juzang, I love his ability to shot make and play make. And Jaime Jaquez, I mean, a blossoming star right before our eyes with his size. You can see over the top. He has a ruggedness and a toughness. I think he'll go down as one of the great Bruins of all time in the record books if he stays in school 4 years. Now, we'll have to see, because in the offseason, all these kids look at their options. Tiger Campbell improved his decision-making as well, and Cody Riley performed down low well. He was the only true big man. So this was a remarkable run. To lose four straight games, stepping into the NCAA tournament and then win five straight from the first four to the final four. Mick Cronin does have the program heading the right direction. I was just impressed with how he reset his team's mindset, because it's about confidence. That's not easy to do when you've lost four straight games. You trail Michigan State by 11.
Yeah.
Some doubts can come into play, but instead they come back, beat the Spartans, and then sprint to a Final Four, and maybe one of the better games in decades in college basketball, right up there with the Leitner shot against Kentucky and a few other games. But that UCLA-Gonzaga game was as good as it gets.
Yeah, good stuff. Steve Lavin, good seeing you, buddy. Appreciate it. I thought it was the men's side, the women's side, the stories. You could embrace a lot of stuff. I thought the NCAA did a great job, and Steve Lavin stopping by to check in. And I agree with Steve. I don't think Gonzaga is going anywhere. I don't think they're going anywhere. Okay, so I teased it. Mock draft, top of next hour. Aaron Rodgers is very smart, and he's also very calculated. And Joy's like, I don't understand what he's saying. I don't get. Aaron is doing a really clever thing here. That next, The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches. Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
March goes in like a lion and out like a lamb, making April the softest, most comfortable month ever. Celebrate comfort with Tommy John underwear. 20% off your first order, TommyJohn.com/herd. Check out their site for details. Wearing a t-shirt now. So Aaron Rodgers did Jeopardy. He's doing it for a couple of weeks. It's a smart person show. He's smart. A lot of people are saying, oh, he's leaving the Packers. No, he's not. Let's stop. Let's not worry about him leaving the Packers. He's a smart guy. It's the offseason. He's not quitting the NFL at 37. He's still probably got four great years left at $35 million a year. Jeopardy pays well. Doesn't pay half of that. Let me tell you that. And he's a great athlete. He should stay in the NFL. And Green Bay, by the way, has mostly got really good players and good offensive lines. So stay in the NFL. He's not going anywhere. So, but what is interesting is Aaron, I just had lunch with somebody last week. I would say I've had two lunches, a lunch and a dinner in the last month with people in Aaron's orbit. He, of course, doesn't like me. That's fine. I think we'd get along great, but doesn't like me. Whatever. And this is pretty obvious, but Aaron's very intentional. Nothing's random with Aaron. Very rarely is anything random with smart people, and Aaron's smart. Things are thought out. He takes positions. It can be a little passive-aggressive, but Aaron thinks of everything. He's not sitting around all day. He's not married, doesn't have a bunch of kids. He doesn't have a life with a million voices. Aaron's got time to sit down and think. Single guys in their 30s that are rich, they pay people to do a lot of the stuff. Go to the store and do that kind of stuff. Aaron's got time to think about stuff. He's smart. He's calculated. He's meticulous. Okay, so let's start with that. So he goes on Pat McAfee's show. And he once again says this. It's planned out. He didn't go into the show. He wasn't cornered. And he makes sure he says this again about Green Bay.
Nothing's really changed. You know, my future is really, a lot of it's out of my control. That's why I mentioned using words like a phrase like beautiful mystery, like, because it is quite uncertain which direction things are going to go. All I can do is play my best, and I feel like last year I did do that, and may have thrown a wrench into some timelines that may have been thought about or desired, but ultimately, things haven't really changed on that front.
I'm powerless. Not my call. I'd love to stay here. What is he doing? It's very shrewd. So if he leaves Green Bay, it's not on him. It's like when mom and dad are fighting and dad plays the victim. Well, if we get divorced, it's your mother's decision. So the kids don't resent him. The kids resent mom. Fair or not, you play the victim. I have no power, no leverage here. If Green Bay moves, I love it. I invested in the Bucks. I'm here for you. Because Aaron's smart, and he's good-looking, and he dates celebrities, and he's the richest guy in Wisconsin. And there is this sense that if it didn't work out, a lot of people would be like, oh, too cool for... No, Aaron is putting all the blame on Green Bay. It's very smart. It's very meticulous. It's very calculated. It is, hey, I got no power here. I mean, I don't want a divorce. So the fans are like, Packers are idiots if Jordan Love doesn't work out. It's out of my control. I don't have, now in terms of, I'm blaming Aaron. I'm just saying, this is what you do. So Aaron's 37. They draft a quarterback. He can see the course has changed. He's just positioning it smartly. So if he's out, wasn't my call. Wasn't my call. See, when Favre left, it wasn't that big of a gamble because Aaron was unbelievable at practice. They'd seen Aaron in the preseason. But if Aaron leaves, Aaron knows he's watching Jordan Love. Jordan Love isn't me. So it may not work. It may not work, and Aaron will come off looking great. And I always root for the star quarterback over the rich franchise, right? I want the star quarterbacks to win. By the way, in terms of him doing Jeopardy, he was good. Of course he's good. Aaron's smart. He's not a guy that's just going to walk into the studio and not be prepared. But by the way, host, I know what he would get paid to host Jeopardy, and I know what quarterbacks for the Packers make when they're as good as Aaron. Keep playing football. Keep playing football. All right. We got another move at quarterback. Carolina's got Darnold. A mock draft. It looks pretty clear now. Next.